Reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Hamas launched rockets toward Tel Aviv, Israel, in what appears to be the first such long-range attack from Gaza since early this year. Details from VOA's Arash Rivasati.
Air raid sirens wailed in the Israeli city of Tel Aviv on Sunday as a barrage of rockets soared overhead. The Israel Defense Forces said it intercepted a number of the projectiles that sent people scrambling for shelter. The attack came just hours after aid trucks passed through the Kerem Shalom border crossing, Israel's main entry point into southern Gaza, as part of a new agreement to bypass Rafah, as Israel continues pressing its military offensive. Egypt refuses to reopen the Rafah crossing until Israel returns control of the territory to the Palestinians. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Mustafa called for a ceasefire in Gaza during a news conference with Spain's foreign minister in Brussels on Sunday.
I think it's time to go beyond condemning actions and requesting Israel to stop the war.
He also thanked Spain for its decision to recognize the Palestinian state, calling on like-minded European countries to do the same. Spain, along with Ireland and Norway, declared this week it would recognize the Palestinian state, prompting an angry response from Israel, which said it amounted to a reward for terrorism and recalled its ambassadors from three capitals. Palestinian health workers say Israeli attacks killed at least 35 people and they hit tents for displaced people in the southern Gaza city of Rafah. They say numerous others are trapped in flaming debris. Sunday's attacks came 2 days after the International Court of Justice ordered Israel to end its military offensive in Rafah. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. The past week has seen a rise in Russian strikes on Ukraine's second city of Kharkiv in the northeast after Russian troops stormed across the border, opening a new front. Reuters correspondent Lucy Fielder.
President Volodymyr Zelensky issued a plea to Ukraine's Western allies to help boost air defenses to keep cities safe. Russia has bombarded Kharkiv throughout the war, having reached the outskirts in a failed attempt to capture it in 2022. Rescuers, medics and journalists occasionally had to rush away from the scene of both strikes and take cover on the ground for fear of another one, as has occurred during several recent Russian attacks. Moscow denies deliberately targeting civilians, but thousands have been killed and injured in the 27 months since it invaded Ukraine.
That's Reuters' Lucy Fielder reporting. The UN estimates hundreds of people died in Friday's big Papua New Guinea landslide. AP correspondent Rika Ann Garcia.
They said that the number is still not final, but they believe that more than 670 people are still under the soil. Serhan Aktoprak, the chief of mission of IOM in Papua New Guinea, spoke about the recovery operations.
As of yet, only 5 bodies could have been recovered, and 1 leg of an individual could be recovered, not the whole body. All of these belong to adults.
Relief crews were moving survivors to safer ground as tons of unstable earth and tribal warfare, which is prevalent in the area, threatened the rescue efforts. I'm Rika Ann Garcia.
Powerful storms have killed at least 15 people, injured hundreds, and left a wide trail of destruction across Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas states. The storms obliterated homes and destroyed a truck stop where drivers took shelter during the latest deadly weather to strike the central U.S. 7 deaths were reported in Cook County, Texas, near the Oklahoma border, where a tornado Saturday night plowed through a rural area near a mobile home park. 5 people were killed in Arkansas, 2 in Oklahoma, 1 in Kentucky. Tens of thousands of residents were without power across the region. Testimony is over at Donald Trump's criminal trial in New York after a parade of 22 witnesses, including an adult star actress, tabloid publisher, and White House insiders. Prosecutors and Trump's lawyers are scheduled to make their closing arguments on Tuesday. After that, it'll be up to 12 jurors to decide whether prosecutors have proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Trump illegally falsified records at his company. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, May 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Africa's leading parties held their final campaign rallies over the weekend ahead of Wednesday's vote.
The ANC brought out the big guns, and it looked like the polling changed positively to the ANC.
Zambian police investigate the mysterious disappearance of an independent member of parliament. Meanwhile, Zambia's high court ruled on the leadership of the main opposition party. Malian opposition politicians announced the formation of a transitional government in exile. The WHO urges countries to do more in reducing under 5 years mortality rates.
When we look at where we are with respect to maternal mortality, 800 women dying every single day in childbirth pregnancies, 5 million children still dying under 5 every year, as you know, that is concerning. We're off track.
And former President Trump faced sharp skepticism while addressing libertarians on Saturday. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Days before South Africa's May 29th election, the leading parties, including the ruling African National Congress, ANC, held their final campaign rallies over the weekend. President Cyril Ramaphosa appealed to South Africans that if they give the ANC another chance, it will do better. Professor Sipho Sipho is a political analyst and former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He tells me it is looking more likely that Wednesday's vote will produce a coalition government led by the ANC.
Well, the ANC brought out the big guns. Former President Thabo Mbeki, he brought the other former president, Kgalema Motlanthe. It got the main entertainers, artists that it could buy, and it looked like the polling changed positively to the ANC. Whereas the polling was suggesting that the ANC would get as low as 40%. After a week of serious campaigning and 2 weeks of campaigning, the number went up, suggesting that the ANC might get up to 45%. But this week, it looks like it might go slightly below 45%. From the ANC side, they are hoping that they will at least get 45%, because most of the polling suggest that. We may find that they might actually do better, but everybody seems to think that even the ANC is already thinking around 45%, and if it's 45%, they think they would have done very well.
We've been talking throughout the campaign period about the possibility of the ANC, whether it can get majority. I was reading also the EFF, Julius Malema, on the issue of whether he will be open to collaboration. And when that happens, if we talk about coalition government, in case, which parties are more likely to come together?
Well, the ANC is almost like the Democratic Alliance. And most of the stalwarts within the ANC are more comfortable with the Democratic Alliance, because one needs to understand that they get the funding from the same people. One must also understand that the president of the ANC got money largely from the white major donors, who had actually given an instruction that was very clear about making sure that the ANC is business friendly. So at the moment, the current leadership of the ANC is under Ramaphosa's pocket. And if Ramaphosa is under the control of the white monopoly capital, it is most likely that the ANC and the DA may form a coalition. And as I say, a number of stalwarts who are very angry with the EFF would rather not work with the EFF. And besides, the EFF seems to be on a far radical posture.
Professor Sipho Sipho is a political analyst and a former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg. Zambian police are investigating the mysterious disappearance of an independent member of parliament, Jay Banda. Some social media accounts describe the missing PM as a critic of President Hakainde Hichilema and his government and suspect foul play. But Home Affairs Minister Jack Mwibu told the Lusaka Times on Sunday that the government had no hand in MP Banda's disappearance. Police spokesperson Ray Hamunga tells me the incident is being investigated.
Yesterday, the 20th of May, around the 0330 hours at Twin Palm Police Station, we received a report from a constable with the public regarding an abandoned motor vehicle. The report was stating that there was a Toyota Land Cruiser, registration number BAX3974ZM, which had no front number plate, but of course it had the back number plate. And the vehicle was discovered parked by the roadside with its engine running and the doors unlocked. The lights were on and the right side of the windscreen was shattered. Inside the vehicle, our police officers found two phones and the written note stating, "Dear Zambians, I'm very sorry. Please forgive me and stay blessed. Honorable Jay Banda, MP." The surrounding areas were searched and no one was found. The motor vehicle was driven to Twin Palm Police Station for further investigations. So we are actively pursuing this matter as police, and we are soliciting for information related to this matter. And we have since opened an inquiry file regarding this matter.
Based on what you are saying, you could be investigating a possible suicide?
Well, for us as police, we cannot pinpoint what it is now. This is why we are trying to investigate, get the bottom of it, to know exactly where is he. And whenever he'll be found, we'll be able to know exactly what we are looking for. But for now, we are looking for him. So we need to establish his whereabouts as of now.
Ray Hamuga is a Zambian police spokesperson. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. The acting president of Zambia's main opposition Patriotic Front, the PF Party, says the country's high court missed the point when it dismissed the case brought by six PF presidential candidates challenging the election of Miles Sampa as the party president. According to the Lusaka Times, the court said the plaintiffs failed to respond to Sampa's application to dismiss their case. Patriotic Front acting president Kevin Lumbinda tells me the court did not address the petitioner's complaint that they were denied their constitutional right to participate in the party leadership election by Miles Sampa.
The petition that was in court, which was raised by six members of the Patriotic Front, was to ask the court to declare that their rights, as enshrined in Part 3 of the Republican Constitution, which gives them the right to participate in elections, was abrogated by Miles Sampa when he purported to have held a party convention to which they were not allowed to participate, and yet they had met all the requirements for them to be on the ballot paper. That was the question. And Miles Sampa and his lawyer filed two preliminary issues.
What does this mean for the PF Party and Miles Sampa's claiming to be president of the PF Party?
There is nowhere in the judgment where the court answered the question as to whether Miles Sampa was duly elected or not. The court did not go into the merits of the petition. The court only dismissed the petition on the basis of duplicity. That's all. So it would be mischievous for anyone to claim that the court has directed or has held that Miles Sampa was duly elected. That is mischief of the highest order and must be dismissed with the contempt it deserves. What does it mean to the Patriotic Front? For us, the position is still the same. Miles Sampa is a masquerader. Miles Sampa held an illegal meeting. Miles Sampa actually ought to be in prison. He ought to be answering questions from prison for breaching the constitution of the party and also for abrogating Article 60 of the Republican Constitution. And we do not agree with the holding of the High Court that there is duplicity of matters, because the two matters are separate.
Gavin Lubinda is the acting president of Zambia's main opposition Patriotic Front Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Miles Sampa was not immediately available to comment. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, May 27th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. A member of Mali's M5RFP pro-democracy movement says the military government should be encouraged to stabilize the country before holding free and fair elections. The statement comes after Malian opposition politicians announced over the weekend that they have formed a transitional government in exile. This happened after the military failed to meet a March deadline to hold elections, according to the French news agency, the AFP. Ramata Sissoko Cisse is a member of Mali's M5RFP movement. She tells me the military should stabilize the nation prior to a return to civilian rule.
There are opposition to the transitional government now in place, and they decided to form a few people in a parallel government now recognizing the transitional government.
So are you a member of the group that is the government in exile, or what?
No, I'm not a member. We are the M5RFP US, USA. We are supporting the transitional government today and calling everybody to help support the government to kind of prepare for elections in the future. It's the political wing of the transitional government today.
Are you satisfied with the military not handing over power at the time it was supposed to?
Well, we are not completely satisfied, but we're working towards that right now. We're looking for stability because there's still rebellion in the country, the jihadists taking over. So we are just being patient, waiting for them to kind of stabilize the country so that we can have a civilian government in the future.
Because some people say you are enabling the military to continue to stay in power.
Well, not really. We just wanted to be realistic, to make sure we give them the path to stabilize the country so that we can eventually have free and fair election in stable country, and to make sure it's going to be fair. Because we are afraid that they might organize election that would not be fair, that will going to create another arrest and destabilize the country again. So we're doing all that for the stability and the unity of the country.
So you want stability as opposed to civilian rule, at least for now?
For now, because we don't think we have the means to even organize elections right now. We don't think the country is stable right now. We think they need to put some foundation with some kind of, very powerful military government to stabilize the country, to hold on to basic principle of life so that we can have something to work on. I mean, they had a peace talk in the country, dialogue, internal dialogue among Malians, and there are some recommendations that were made. We're waiting for and see which ones will be implemented to make sure people get together and organize themselves so that eventually we can have free and fair elections.
Ramata Sissoko Cisse is the president of the Change in Mali movement. She was speaking with me from Lawrenceville, U.S. state of Georgia. At least 80% of countries are not likely to reach the UN Sustainable Development Goals on maternal mortality ahead of the 77th World Health Assembly meeting that begins today, Monday. The World Health Organization says 20% of countries are not working sufficiently towards reducing mortality rates. Maureen Odhiambo reports.
In 2020, about 800 women died from preventable causes related to pregnancy and childbirth daily. Amid growing concern, WHO member states starting today will discuss a draft resolution to accelerate action on a resolution on maternal, newborn and child health at the 77th World Health Assembly that starts today in Geneva. Bruce Aylward is the Assistant Director General of the Universal Health Coverage in the Life Course Division of the World Health Organization.
When we look at where we are with respect to maternal mortality, 800 women dying every single day in childbirth pregnancies, 5 million children still dying under five every year, as you know, should be absolutely shameful. That is concerning. We're off track. So we have a lot to do.
According to UNICEF, globally, almost one in six young women give birth before the age of 18. Global progress has been largely flat since 2015, bringing the significant progress made during the Millennium Development Goal era to a stop. In a meeting broadcasted virtually, the Director General of the Federal Ministry of Health in Somalia, Guled Ali, said urgent action is needed to improve maternal, newborn and child health.
We have proposed to this resolution before the Executive Board of the WHO Somalia. The aim we put forward on this resolution was to accelerate actions or efforts of maternal and child mortality rates. We are quite far off track on achieving the SGDs in 2030.
WHO member states, in collaboration with the Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health, will focus on solutions for action with key interventions by country leaders and partners and the launch of the new evidence products. Rajat Hosla is the executive director of the Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health, the world's largest alliance advocating for the health and well-being of women, children and adolescents. He says there are challenges in meeting the 2030 Sustainable Development Targets on maternal and child mortality.
But the fact is that we were making immense gains. We were doing very well. We were on the path of absolute recovery from a lot of these issues. Why did we lose the momentum? Why is it that these are not issues that are getting the kind of financing that we expect them to? What happened as competing agendas took over, and why even within the multilateral system, it's not seen as a priority today as it was a few years ago?
The UN says political leadership is needed to refocus the world's attention on the importance of maternal, newborn and child health. At the moment, 63 countries are not on track to achieve the 2030 Sustainable Development Goals for reducing newborn mortality, and 54 countries are also falling short of the under 5 child mortality target. The Assembly this week will focus on raising threats to progress, including geopolitical conflicts and climate change, and how member states can unlock new resources and interventions to advance towards the 2030 targets for women, children and adolescents. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
Former President Donald Trump faced sharp skepticism on his presidential bid when addressing libertarians on Saturday. President Joe Biden's weekend remarks focused on encouraging graduating cadets to be the guardians of American democracy. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
Unlike the supporting MAGA crowds he regularly encounters at his campaign rallies, Donald Trump faced several detractors at Saturday's Libertarian Party National Convention. Booing was heard when the Republican presidential candidate mentioned an article written by political commentator DeRoy Murdoch ahead of Trump's address.
DeRoy wrote, "Donald J. Trump will address the Libertarian Party at its national convention on Saturday. The Libertarian Party should nominate Trump for President of the United States." Whoa. That's nice. That's nice. Only if you want to win.
Those attending did clap and cheer when Trump listed some of his priorities should voters approve of his return to the White House.
On education, we will cut federal funding for any school pushing Marxist and communist race and gender theories on our children. We will keep men out of women's sports. And I will not give one penny to any school that has a vaccine mandate or a mask mandate.
President Joe Biden, who is also bidding to get reelected, addressed a different crowd on Saturday. Graduates of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, New York.
There's never been a time in history when we've asked our military to do so many different things in so many different places around the world all at the same time.
While stressing that American soldiers will be kept off the battlefield, Biden emphasized the U.S. support for Ukraine. Furthermore, he talked about the role of the U.S. military in defending Israel from recent Iranian drone attacks. and the work being done to facilitate humanitarian assistance into Gaza. The graduating cadets were also encouraged to, quote, hold fast to the values they learned at West Point.
But ideas need defenders to make them real. That's what you, the class of 2024, are all about. Defenders of freedom, free freedom, champions of liberty, guardians, and I mean this, guardians of American democracy.
As the U.S. commemorates Memorial Day on Monday, Biden is expected to participate in the services planned at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. The Trump campaign released a statement paying tribute to fallen service members. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for the Break Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with athletics. Nigerian young star Favour Ashe has become the first Nigerian to run sub 10 seconds, five times, doing so in three consecutive years. Ashe achieved a new record in the men's 100 meters at the NCAA East preliminaries in the United States. The 22-year-old now has the highest sub 10 clockings in history by a Nigerian, having done so five times in his career, surpassing all-time greats like Davidson Ezenwa, Olakbadi Adenikon, Divine Odudu, Deji Aliu, and Olusoji Fashuba. Ashe stomped to a new personal best of 9.94 seconds in the men's 100 meters at the NCAA East Preliminaries, the fastest time in the NCAA this year, and the second fastest time in the world this year.
Yeah, my coach, we've been working, you find, you see, no one ever wants to just execute and move fast. So I just came and do what I got to do.
Staying with athletics, Kenya's Beatrice Chebet broke the women's 10,000 meters world record with a victory in 28 minutes 54.14 seconds at the Prefontaine Classic Diamond League Athletics meeting in Eugene, Oregon on Saturday. The 24-year-old, a two-time world championships medalist at 5,000 meters and a cross-country world champion, broke the record of 29 minutes 1.03 seconds set by Ethiopian Lesembet Gide in Hangelo on June 8, 2021. Chebet, who says she never planned to break the world record, says she is in pole position to pick up an Olympic gold medal in Paris.
For the first time to be in an Olympic team, and I know with good health and hard work, I know I'm going to medal again in Olympics, and that will be my favorite medal.
In football news, Egyptian giants Al-Hakli have once again reigned supreme as kings of African club football following their CAF Champions League final 1-0 win over Tunisia's Esperance Sportive de Tunis at a packed to the rafters Cairo International Stadium on Saturday evening. This was the Egyptians' 12th CAF Champions League title, with Saturday's win being the fourth time they lift the continent's most prestigious title in succession. The win on Saturday also marks 20 CAF Champions League matches without a loss for the champions. They also finished the campaign with the best defensive record, with just a single goal conceded in this season. And on to basketball. After a two-day action-packed classification round, the eight teams now know who they will face in the last eight stage of the 2024 Basketball African League playoffs, which are underway at the BK Arena in Kigali, Rwanda. The first quarterfinal match will see Al-Hakli SC take on Al-Hakli of Libya. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, May 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.
warrior queen, the black princess, or other superheroes with afros are growing in popularity in comics. This week on Our Voices, we will dive into the comic world where creators contribute to the richness and diversity of the medium through their art in ways that resonate with all races and genders. Join the conversation on